99.5 FM, WBAI New York, and on the internet at WBAI.org. The program you just heard, Labrish with Haftar Selassie, will be back next week at 2, following the work of the Midnight Ravers. And stay tuned, it is 5 o'clock, 5 a.m., New York City time, and time for Back of the Book. Stay tuned.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. Well, okay, okay, we went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
My estimates indicate that it ought to be somewhere around 5 a.m., and you're listening to all I Went Outside Radio, WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Well, good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about various things in this program, and you can find out a little bit more about some of that stuff by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. And when you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left side of your screen. Click on the top of that where it says Latest Back of the Book Program Links, and you will be brought to the web page for this particular radio program. We do a new one for every radio program. And the WBAI website and the archives seem to be working all right as we record this program. This is our 136th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live one, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. The top story in all of the multiverses in the Uber multiverse is we have rocketed up to the gigantic number of 122 followers on Twitter. Oh, everybody is just amazed at that huge number. The next regular WBAI local station board meeting will be held on Wednesday, June 14th, 2023 at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. The CDC website seems to no longer be giving up-to-date information about COVID-19 in America. What they have posted is the same information as they'd posted last week. And that showed a total number of deaths in America being lower than the number they'd posted 2 weeks earlier. So I think they've decided not to pay attention anymore. More than 1,000 people in America are still dying of COVID-19 every week, but that's no longer worth reporting in detail, apparently. The pandemic is not over. Pickles of the North and I are still keeping our masks on. We've both gotten our bivalent vaccinations and our bivalent booster shots. Speaking of getting shots and stuff like that, we went to the VA hospital for my doctor's visit this past week. This was the second time I've been out of the apartment this year. Woohoo! What a celebration that is. My numbers are good because you get all the blood tests, you know, and they looked at it. And numbers from that thing are pretty good. Although my primary care physician is convinced that I have some internal bleeding going on. It's not gigantic, but there's something there. My iron levels are really low. They were really low. Then he put me on this iron pill. Oh, the iron pill does things to your intestines that are very unpleasant. And it certainly did all of that. And, oh, man, what a thing. Anyway, so, yes, we have... We've gotten there, and I'm going to have to deal with this possible internal bleeding thing going on. He doesn't think there can be anything else that can be lowering my iron so much. And right now I'm kind of treading water because of the iron pill. It does put more iron in my blood, but it does stuff to the gut that's terrible. So sometime soon... In order to see what the hell might be bleeding, they're gonna take an endoscope and look up my endo. And here's a program note. We are preempted next week for a big fundraising special, but we will be back on June 3rd, and we'll be doing fundraising ourselves at that point in time. So, yeah, station really needs to get dough, and there's no way around it. So there's a big 2-week-long super-duper marathon special fundraising deal going on, and we're preempted for some of that next week. So Memorial Day weekend, we have off. This coming Monday is kind of special. It will mark the 80th anniversary of the end of the Battle of the Atlantic, which is officially considered to have ended on May 22, 1943, when the Allies were able to destroy more U-boats than could be built in the month of May. And the U-boats never were able to become the extreme menace that they'd been before that date. And the Battle of the Atlantic, of course, was this... part of World War II, where the Germans, the Third Reich, realized that they could not compete on the surface against the British fleet, but in World War I, they had sent out their submarines, which the Germans referred to as U-boats, Unterseeboot, as it was called. And so they said, you know, in World War I, we did a lot of damage, but we've got more modern submarines now, whereas... merchant ships still need to hang around on the surface as usual. Not a whole lot of difference in the surface fleet, but the submarines are much more capable than they had been 20 years earlier because they've been working on them. And what happens was, of course, Britain, Great Britain, is an island nation and they need to import a lot of stuff. They can't grow enough food for themselves. They don't have raw materials. They don't have enough iron. They got to import that. Coal they had. But everything else, they were needing to import. And so the idea was to strangle them. And so what the Third Reich did, especially under Admiral Dönitz, who was the big admiral of all of this, and he was saying, look, we can shut them down. We got enough U-boats out there. We'll sink every merchant ship that comes anywhere near Great Britain, and they will starve. And that was the strategy. So they sent them out. And he started out with, like, just, you know, like 20 U-boats out there. And the 20 U-boats did a lot of damage. And they said, oh, this does work. And Dönitz's ideas... really suddenly really caught on. Before that, they said, yeah, we should do that. But it was shown that, you know, Dönitz had the idea. And Hitler said, look, this is what's going to win the war for us. Because prior to that, his whole thing, he was an infantry corporal. Corporals are not generals. Corporals know that, yes, you go from here and go over there and carry this message. That's what corporals can do, and that's what Hitler did in World War One. And, well, that was about as much as he could understand. And so he understood, yeah, a lot of infantry guys go over and shoot the other guys, and we win. In some cases, that worked. In other cases, luckily, it did not work. However, he then saw that Britain was having problems, and so they were producing submarines at a fantastic rate all of a sudden. And because the submarine can be produced with a lot less effort and material than many of the surface ships. And, of course, again, they couldn't compete against Britain with surface ships. So they were producing a whole lot of these U-boats. And what happened was eventually they had hundreds of U-boats, and they were able to keep 100 U-boats at a time in the Atlantic. And they were all over the Atlantic. And for a while, they were shooting down everything early in the war. Then the Allies said, gee, maybe we better put convoys together again. They'd done that at the end of World War One. They'd finally figured it out. And it took them a while to figure it out because they had thought that in the era of steamships, convoys wouldn't work anymore, because they had convoys in the days of sailing ships, wooden sailing ships. But then they said, oh, that won't work anymore. And then in World War One, they said, we better try it, and it worked. So for World War Two, the British didn't bother to do convoys for a while. So individual ships are floating around in the Atlantic, and the U-boats come up, and the classic idea is the U-boat will sight them through the periscope and shoot a torpedo at them. That's not how it works. What happens is the merchant ship is unarmed, so the U-boat spots them. It's on the surface, and the U-boat only goes underwater when there's a threat, usually. And so they tool around on the water, and they know where the shipping lanes are, and they go around. There's a boat. There's a ship over there, a merchant ship bound for Great Britain. And, of course, if it had a British flag, they just immediately used their deck gun, and they fired shells into the ship at the waterline, and that would sink it. Sometimes they would board the ship and take what they needed, and then they would sink it. And there were variations on that theme. And so they would go around and do that on the surface. And it took a while for the British to say, let's put all of the ships that are coming here and leaving here in a convoy where they're all together and they're surrounded by escort destroyers. Destroyers are a type of ship that's really specifically made to fight submarines. And so they finally figured out to do that. And there was the Battle of the Convoys, and it was part of the Battle of the Atlantic. And so there were all sorts of problems with dealing with this stuff. They tried to find different ways of dealing with it. Aircraft were very good because they would keep the U-boats under the water, where they couldn't move as fast, and they couldn't stay down there for all that long. They had a certain amount of air, and they could scrub it a bit, but if the submarine stays down for too long, the air starts getting really foul. They can't get all of the carbon dioxide scrubbed out of it. Plus, they're running on batteries. The batteries leak a little bit of hydrogen. Oh, that's no good. And there's acid. It's lead acid batteries. So a little bit of acid vapor will come out of that kind of thing. And it was very unhealthy to be in a U-boat that had been underwater for too long. And so the aircraft played a vital role in keeping the U-boats from doing too much. But still, 100 of them out there, they were shooting everything. And then not everybody was in a convoy. When America entered the war, oh boy, it was open season. Loads of U-boats came over to the east coast of America, and it was a shooting gallery because the Americans took no precautions whatsoever. For instance, the U-boats would hang out in Long Island Sound and in the New York Bight, that's the Atlantic Ocean off New York, and they would sit there on the surface, and the ships would be silhouetted against the lights of Manhattan. And they'd say, there's a ship, and they'd go over, and they'd shoot it and sink it, and then keep running around looking for more. And they were just sinking everything in sight. The ships were coming up all alone, unprotected, easy pickings. So they had an easy time with that. And eventually America started convoying things. But the deal is they kept doing this, and it was a long time. And between figuring out how to do things, it got better.
And of course, before the United States entered the war, the great target for the U-boats were the Canadian ships that were bringing vast amounts of grains and other supplies to the U.K., so and also there were U-boats coming up the St. Lawrence River.
Yeah.
You know, and yes, so it was a very terrible, terrible time, but they persevered.
Yes, and they eventually figured things out like sonar so that the destroyers could see that there was a U-boat in the vicinity and approximately where it was. They eventually figured out to have forward-firing weapons so that they could aim the destroyer or other ships. There were just specific anti-submarine ships put out, too. And instead of said, you will probably have seen the classic thing of where the ship goes out and it shoots depth charges off to the side and they roll them off the back. That relies on the destroyer being able to go right over the submarine and the submarine not wiggling around and getting away. It's much easier if you shoot at a target than try to just bomb an area that the target might be in. And so they came up with a forward-firing, I think they were called hedgehogs, and they fired a bunch of explosives, depth charges, and those things would hit where the submarine was and damage it or sink it. And they also had a lot of aircraft out there. They had a radar. They improved radar so that it could see smaller objects. It used to be, at the start, the radar might be able to see something the size of a battleship, but it couldn't see a submarine, which has a very small profile on the surface. And so they would improve it and improve it, and eventually the radar got so it could just see a U-boat very easily. And then there was a thing I hadn't known about called the ley light. And it was invented by a guy named Lee. And with the radar, as you approach, if you're in an aircraft and you're approaching the submarine by radar, as you get close, you can't see it anymore because you're just about on top of it. That's at that point, the ley light comes on, lights it up. It's a sort of a searchlight. And the people in the aircraft can shoot the hell out of the submarine. And that was another thing they did. So they had all sorts of things. They were greatly helped, of course, by being able to read some of the messages back and forth from the Kriegsmarine. That's the Third Reich's Navy. And however, unfortunately, the Admiral Dönitz was a bit brighter than the guys who are, you know, fighting the ground war. And he said, let's beef up our Enigma machines that were encrypting our messages, and so they were much harder to decrypt than the normal traffic. And also there was more discipline, which was an important thing in their particular way of doing things. And so they had this fight going on, and it lasted from September of 1939 until May of 1943. So that's like almost 3.5 years of this battle. And eventually, with all of those improvements, they were able to make it so that they could stop the submarines from doing all that much. And in May of 43, they blasted so many submarines, April and May of 43, they blasted so many submarines that the Germans couldn't keep up with it all of a sudden. Prior to that, the Germans had submarines coming off all over the place. So that was a very big deal, and that was an important part of World War II, because at one point Great Britain was within 2 weeks of possibly having to surrender because they couldn't eat.
G.R. Paul, you know, thinking about what you were saying just now about that big battle that went on for years in the Atlantic, my mom was telling me, my mom is like almost 93 years old, so she was a kid during World War II, turned into a late teen during World War II. And she said, of course, they had blackouts from the get-go, being part of the empire.
And America didn't, yes. Even after it was at war.
Yeah. And even with the blackouts, they had the U-boats coming quite far up the St. Lawrence River. And they also had rationing from the get-go, too, because they knew they had to help out their cousins in the U.K. And her brother had a real love of butter. So at first, I think he started just taking her rationed portion of butter, and then they had a discussion about it, and she decided to let him have it because she could do without. And to this day, she does not put butter on her toast. She just doesn't put butter on anything because
wow,
that just stayed with her from the war.
A lasting effect of the Battle of the Atlantic. So Monday is the 80th anniversary of the end of the Battle of the Atlantic. Monday is also special because on Monday afternoon, we will slip into late spring. At 3:52 Monday afternoon, we will enter late spring, and that's a subseason that can be truly wonderful. And it's very wonderful because you have all that bright light, and you get basically the brightest light of the year. Of course, the early summer does the same thing. It's the same deal. They're both on opposite sides of the summer solstice, so it's the same lighting. And so the light will be great. It'll be sunny. It's going to be warm, but it isn't summer warm, so people who don't like the summer heat can really enjoy late spring most of the time. And it's just nice. It's wonderful. Everything's flowering up, and everything is really getting ready for summer. The birds are really going nuts, reproducing and tweeting and flying around. Just about all of the plants are fully leafed up and grinding away at making a living, and the chlorophyll is operating. Oh, boy. So it's a great time, and I'm hoping to be able to get out into it and not make it so that I only get out of the house 2 times this year. Pickles just like that. So we're gonna see if we can manage to get me out more in this particular time, and I hope you can enjoy it too. At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and I'm R. Paul Martin. There's a science journal called Earth's Future, and it's got an article saying that Manhattan's skyscrapers are making the island sink by 1 or 2 millimeters every year. Good grief. The paper says, quote, New York City faces accelerating inundation risk from sea level rise, subsidence, and increasing storm intensity from natural and anthropogenic causes, unquote. The report also says, quote, development and filling in of tributaries have cut off nearly all the sediment supply to the East and Harlem rivers, which in turn has stopped deposition in New York Harbor, increasing the danger of New York City flooding from nor'easters and hurricanes, unquote. So the deal here is that by human beings doing stuff, those buildings are huge and they weigh a lot. And the thing is, they're in bedrock, but even bedrock can sink a bit. Antarctica is an example of ground, the actual bedrock, sinking a bit. It's lower down because of the miles of ice that are on top of it. One of the issues that will happen will be a piston effect when a big chunk of that ice slips out, which may well happen. Not very soon, but at some point, besides, you know, melting and breaking off big chunks. At some point, a giant amount of it could just slide off into the ocean. And at that point, the Antarctica itself, the continent, the rock, will rise a bit. We'll have a piston effect, and people aren't quite sure what will happen when that goes on, but it's something else. But yes, those buildings are weighing down the rock that Manhattan is built upon. Geophysicist Tom Parsons, who works for the United States Geological Survey and who contributed to the study in the Earth's Future article, said, quote, "The softer the soil, the more compression there is from the buildings," unquote. And so, yeah, that's around, and it isn't like Manhattan's rock is floating on dirt. It's connected down deep, but it still has an effect. And gee whiz, you know, it's an interesting idea. And Parsons continues, quote, "It wasn't a mistake to build such large buildings in New York, but we've just got to keep in mind every time you build something there, you push down the ground a little bit more," unquote. He also warned that besides flooding, there's also the issue of salt water getting at the steel and concrete that's underground in Manhattan. And there's a lot of steel and concrete underground. We saw that after the Twin Towers got destroyed, and we got to see, as after they dug out everything, the bathtub, as it's called. And, you know, it's very low. It's well below water level. And salt water getting in there, you know. Salt water, we all know, will easily go after iron, the iron and steel. It also goes after concrete. And, oh boy, that's something else that goes on there. It's a little more complicated. Both the steel and concrete, of course, corrode over time. And so this is making the sea level rise even more of a threat to New York City. And Mr. Parsons also said, quote, "Major cities on every continent except Antarctica are observed to be subsiding, and the issue may be worsened as populations grow," unquote. And the populations are, in fact, growing. The United Nations is predicting that 68% of all humans on Earth will live in urban areas by the year 2050. That's a lot. Hadn't had that before. That's a concentration that hadn't happened before. Right now, we've got... Have we hit 8 billion yet? Yeah, we've hit 8 billion by now. In 2050, I don't know what it's going to be, but it's going to be a lot more than what we have now. Unless, of course, something really bad happens, which could happen. In any event, this is another thing to be concerned about. Another reason why the climate crisis is a crisis. And why it's so stupid that, you know, what are the congressional things that's changed since the Republicans took over? We all know that, of course, the January 6th committee isn't being reconvened. And Pickles of the North here did a whole segment on the January 6th report last time. By the way, a lot of that is up on the webpage for the previous program up on glib.com. And another of the committees that isn't being revived by the Republican majority is the one about the climate. You know, climate change is happening. Oh, no, it's not. They're still in denial about that. This is terrible. That may be the most lasting blunder of the entire right-wing thrust in America. God damn. And these people, you know, they talk about family values, and a lot of them have kids, and they have grandkids. Their grandkids are really going to be suffering. You know, their grandkids are going to be around in the second half of the 21st century, and they're going to be suffering from all of the woes that are going to be brought on by the changed climate. I mean, it won't be done changing, but it will be significantly changed by the second half of this century. Ah, damn. And, well, it's already changing more than they ever thought it would by this time. And there's no telling what it will be like 30 years from now, 30, 40 years from now. Yeah, the storms are getting stronger and more frequent. Yeah, we don't need no stinking consideration of what to do about climate change. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. And you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org.
And thinking about the foibles of rich people, this is not as immense as what R. Paul was just talking about, but still it's something that's made me a little peevish. There is no way that paparazzi can chase anybody for 2 hours on a high-speed chase throughout Manhattan, because you know why? You'd end up in Staten Island or Brooklyn or Queens
or New Jersey.
Or the Bronx or New Jersey. Yes, this is true.
Or you might end up in the Atlantic Ocean.
Or that is possible if you take a wrong turn. Yes, yes, we know about all the travails of the Duke and Duchess. Also, the Duke Prince, I guess, the Princely Duke, the Dukey Prince, I don't know what to call him. But, yes, Harry and Meghan. Yeah, they are rich enough without having any money from their former job as, you know, working royals. They're rich. They're rich, even richer now, with all the deals they've made with, you know, media and book writing and such, that they can take care of their own security. It sounds like they didn't have very competent people. You're rich, you're in the public eye, you choose to be in the public eye for whatever reason, then you make sure you have people with you that make sure you can go to and from places safely, keeping yourself safe and keeping the general public safe. I don't think the general public was in a lot of danger from what went on after they left their big event the other day. And you know, they weren't in that much danger, too. They probably got scared, which makes sense. But, man, you know, this wasn't a case like Harry's mom, who had a driver who was drunk. And I wish she had had people that would have made sure that the driver was not drunk. And they wouldn't have ended up in that horrible, horrible accident that killed her and her boyfriend. So it's just, what kept going through my mind about this story, this was not a near catastrophic event. You know what a catastrophic event is in terms of vehicular stuff? That guy in 2017 who drove his vehicle up on the bike path and killed all those people for his, you know, political beliefs. Or that guy who was angry and high and drove through Times Square and hit people with his car. Those are catastrophes. Rich people not knowing how to conduct themselves when they go out in public in a place like Manhattan where there's going to be a paparazzi. That's not a catastrophe. Tan Stoffel, right, R. Paul?
There ain't no such thing as a free lunch.
And so pay to have good people who know what they're doing, taking care of you. And, you know, don't bother us with all your angst, please.
Yeah, 2 hour. The idea of a 2 hour high speed chase in Manhattan is just so silly.
You know, cars on the sidewalk. No, no.
Yeah.
You know, there may have been some sloppy driving. There may have been jerks on scooters and on electric bikes, you know, going alongside. We all have to put up with that crap every day with people driving motorized vehicles on the sidewalk, and we don't have the luxury of having a limo protecting us. We're out there walking on the sidewalk. All through the pandemic, this has been happening. People just driving stuff on the sidewalk, and it's all electric, and you cannot hear them coming.
Yeah, we saw that yesterday when we went out to the VA. And what they've got a new thing now. It's almost a truck. It's a tricycle. It's shaped as a tricycle. It has three wheels. And it has a load in the back. It's, you know, it's enclosed. And now some of them, you know, we've seen them for a while. They'll have like a little a box that they somehow tack onto it. This actually is built to contain a rather large cargo area. And it's got walls in the side. And it's a big thing. And it goes pretty fast. And these guys didn't look like they were watching where they were going. But they made sure they ran it all on the sidewalk.
Yeah, these are delivery people who are working at supermarkets. And you know how you'd usually have a guy on a bicycle and he'd have the bin in front of him and he'd usually ride it in the street. Although those were up on the sidewalk too, because heck, if the ones that are motorized are up on the sidewalk, everybody's going to go on the sidewalk now. And you don't know, they go right past you. And you, if you took one step back, that's it. You'd be nailed by this thing. Sometimes they're going 30 miles an hour, the people on scooters and electric bikes. And it's like, man, you know, people have already been killed by those things.
Yeah. And there's no license plate on it or anything. And these guys are going to hit you and split. And that's happened. They hit people, knock them over, and they split. And if you're knocked over, you can't chase them. I mean, they're going to take off, even if they take off at like 15 miles an hour. How do you run 15 miles an hour for a while? And the guy just takes off. And if he just goes a few blocks away, you're not going to be able to find him. And, you know, you'd have to say, well, this guy hit me. And, you know, maybe you could describe the guy, but maybe he'll change his looks. Who knows? But the thing is, these are a real danger, and they're getting worse because now they're a bigger, heavier machine, and they pile loads of stuff, groceries and other things. Many things get piled in there. So this is a machine that now weighs probably a quarter of a ton. And you get something like that smashing into you, it's pretty much like getting hit by a car. A lot of accidents where pedestrians are hit by cars don't happen at 50 miles an hour. They happen while a guy makes a slow turn, could be 10, 15 miles an hour, and it kills somebody or knocks them down at least and hurts them. And these things are doing it on the sidewalk in the first place. And there really need to be some laws about this because this is ridiculous. Well, there are laws about this, but we have a slow motion unofficial police strike going on in New York City ever since the police got miffed about the George Floyd demonstrations in 2020. And they don't enforce laws. We had a couple of traffic enforcement agents walking past us while the sidewalks were full of these guys on all sorts of electric scooters running up and down the sidewalk. And they did nothing about it. So they're all in on it. And I don't know how this is going to work out because people are going to be getting run over like crazy by these electric vehicles that you can't hear. Time's running out. We got to raise money. We can't keep going on not having enough money. So we got to ask you for some dough. Yes, yes, that's right. It's time for the WBAI pitching train to come rollicking down the goddamn tracks and begging you for money. This is listener-sponsored, non-commercial, WBAI New York. Listener-sponsored, non-commercial means we are not running ordinary commercials like you see them on TV. We are listener-sponsored, and that's you. You, the listener, are our sponsor. And what we need to do is ask you to be the sponsor. Yes, if you're not contributing to keeping BAI on the air, then, oh boy, that's a bit of a problem because we know there are people listening who really want BAI to survive, but they're not contributing any dough, and we need it. We are behind in bills, and I know, oh, you're just behind in bills. But the thing is, the primary way we get any revenue is by asking you to send us that revenue. Then if you don't, we are screwed. And so that's what we're doing now. We're asking you to call 1-212-209-2950 and say you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. A BAI buddy is the name we have for our sustaining membership, which means that once a month you send in a donation. And the way it works is you call 1-212-209-2950. And at the call center, they'll pick up. You tell them you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. Back of the Book is the name of this radio program, and it's important that we get credit for having listeners. Otherwise, we could go away. And so you tell them you want to become a BAI buddy, and you tell them how much you would like to donate on a monthly basis. You could donate $10 a month or $15 a month or $20 a month or more if you want to. You could also make a one-time donation. If you donate $25, you become a member of WBAI, and you'll be able to vote in the upcoming election. Yeah, we have elections this year. You're going to be able to vote in these elections that are coming up that are so vital. And also, of course, when you're a BAI buddy and you're contributing, when you get up to the $25 mark that you've contributed as a BAI buddy, you also become a member and can vote. So, to become a BAI buddy, you call 1-212-209-2950 and tell them you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And then you give them your credit card or debit card number, and you tell them how much you want to donate every month. You also tell them what day of the month you would like your credit card or debit card billed. That way, it doesn't happen at an inconvenient time. I mean, you can look at your calendar. You know when your credit card or debit card is low or high or whatever. And you pick a good time and you say, that's when to bill my card. And so that's how you do it. And then they'll set you up with that. And you will automatically be charged in your credit card or your debit card. And you will be able to get BAI some dough. You'll be contributing, helping to pay the bills. We have a tower at Four Times Square. It has the transmitter there, and we share an antenna there. Without that, we're off the air. And we have a studio at 388 Atlantic Avenue, and the landlord has been very kind about not throwing us out, but we're behind on the rent by quite a bit, and we just need to pay these bills. And so that's stuff that we need to do, and you can help. In fact, you're the primary help. The major help of revenue that we get is from you, the listener. And if you, the listeners, do not respond enough, we will go away. We will go away. Because, as I've said before, at Four Times Square, all they have to do is flick a switch. Literally, flick a switch. It turns off the power. And if there's no power, the transmitter is just a lump of pieces. So 1-212-209-2950, that's a number to call if you want to keep WBAI on the air. And also, you got to consider overnight programs. There are people who do not value these overnight programs. And yes, I know, right around now, it's starting to become the rosy dawn, and you can see things out there. And gee whiz, it's not so overnight right now, but at other times it is. So we need you to call us up, 1-212-209-2950. That's 1-212-209-2950. We need you to call us right now and say, we'll call the call center right now and say, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. That's 1-212-209-2950. Oh, we got to hear from you. 1-212-209-2950. And, we cover various topics. We cover science things on this program. stuff you don't hear about elsewhere. We cover, oh, just so many different things. We talk about current events, and we don't necessarily have the average view on some of these things. And, oh, boy, we cover various LGBT plus infinity issues. And, gee whiz, we gotta save BAI, folks. And you can do it. You can help to save BAI by calling 1-212-209-2950 and saying, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of back of the book. And you give them your information, and then you become a BAI buddy. And with that, you will have done your bit in helping WBAI to survive. And you can also call 1-212-209-2950 to make a one-time donation, if you please. We accept those, too. All right. Thanks a lot, folks. I hope some of you are calling. We really need a bunch of you to call.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
So we talked last time about Montana and their homophobia and, oh, the passing anti-LGBT plus infinity laws. Well, they seem to not care too much about anybody's rights. And what they've done this week is they have banned TikTok. Now, there's a lot of controversy about TikTok, which comes out of a company that is ruled over by the Chinese Communist Party, which is always a fun place. And they what TikTok does is it really has appealed to teenagers because it lets you post a video and you can do stupid stuff on it, which the kids love. And some adults love too, I bet, I guess too. But the thing is, it is grabbing information from people. Now, people are concerned, the government is concerned, that the Chinese Communist Party is going to be able to use all that information on Americans to harm America. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's exactly what they would like to do. On the other hand, that information and more is also being mined by the likes of Google and Facebook and Twitter, and you can name a whole raft of places. I could certainly name a raft of places because I have to dodge their attempts to get information from me. By the way, when we look at the archives, they archive all these programs, and it isn't just the program that's up there. It's also stuff we, the producers, put up there. Now, I take a while to get my archive blurbs posted, but if you want to look at previous archives of this program, at the bottom of it all, there's an area called Links and Information, and I give a bunch of information about things that will help you to protect your privacy. And I would strongly recommend that people look at that because, geez, people are just giving away all that information. But the thing is, American companies are grabbing that information like crazy, and nobody's doing a whole lot about that. It's all because it's the Chinese Communist Party, which is, of course, going to be an enemy nation state. Maybe it already is. And it's the kind of thing that we have to be careful of. But there are laws in this country. One of them relates to the First Amendment. Freedom of speech. You can talk to people if you like. Well, Montana has now banned TikTok. And the question is, how the hell are these weasels going to do that? I mean, it's on the internet. Is Montana going to ban the internet? Is Montana going to try and make it so people cannot connect to TikTok over the internet? Now, places do that. Like right now, Russia is tremendously clamping down on everything because they don't want people to find out other information regarding their war against Ukraine. And so one of the things is they're clamping down on the Tor browser. And I keep seeing things that the people at the Tor browser do to try and avoid being shut out of Russia. The Tor browser is a special browser that allows you to look at things anonymously. Again, you can go to the archives at WBAI.org, and you look up the back of the book archives, and in the ones prior to the one that's going to be for this program, you will see at the bottom links about the Tor browser and other things. And those links will be up on the archive blurb for this, but it takes me some days to get to that because I'm lazy. Anyway, so I don't see how Montana can do this. Are they going to try and mount a blockade of the style that Russia and China use? And India is trying to block various places. All sorts of nation states try to block websites. And some of them are fairly successful at it, but nobody can be completely successful at it because people are wanting to see those things. And it's complicated. But Montana is in the United States of America. Montana cannot say, for instance, Montana cannot say, well, there's a radio station in another state. We don't like what they're saying, so we're going to block them. You can't do that. The Federal Communications Commission says, no, you can't do that. You have no power over the airwaves, period. And also, what would they do? Would they, like, set up jamming stations? That gets you arrested by the Federal Communications Commission. That gets the feds showing up in armored vehicles and confiscating all of your radio equipment. And you can't get away with that crap. Well, they're trying to get away with this crap. The United States of America, which I hope doesn't actually ban TikTok, the United States of America would have to say, well, we're banning it as the United States. And even then, how the hell would they do that? If you want to go in there, and there's not just the Tor browser, but that's the big major one. You can go to TikTok in various ways. You can go to TikTok through a proxy in another nation state and then have that go back to TikTok. And there's nothing Montana or the United States can do about it. It's really difficult. And the business of shutting down a website so that you can't go there, that's just too difficult. So I don't know what the hell these morons in Montana are thinking they're doing, but it's a violation of the First Amendment, and I don't think they have the technology to do it. So I don't know how that's going to work out. It's probably going to be something stupid in the end. Speaking of stupid things from states, Florida. Pride events are being canceled in Florida. This past week, the president of Tampa Pride, Carrie West, said in a statement that the Tampa Pride board had to cancel their annual end of summer Pride on the River event. And Carrie West said, with deep sorrow and sadness, unquote, that they're canceling it. That's because earlier this past week, Florida's Republican governor, Ron DeSantis, signed into law four bills that targeted the rights of LGBT plus infinity people. And they have been described by critics as the, quote, slate of hate, unquote. House Bill 1423, commonly referred to as the, quote, anti-drag ban, unquote, threatens small businesses and organizers of pride events in Florida with criminal penalties for allowing minors to watch drag shows performances, even with a parent's approval. This is another First Amendment case. So there's some guy wearing a dress or a woman wearing, what is men's clothing? Does she have a zipper in the front? Is that men's clothing? Well, women wear that these days, and you can't even describe what the hell drag really means. It doesn't have to be flamboyant. It can just be wearing clothing that somebody says, oh, that's a clothing of a different gender from you.
Why, it could be Mary Martin dressed up as Peter Pan.
Could be that. It could be. What are they going to do? Are they going to go raiding the TV stations that show Bugs Bunny cartoons where Bugs Bunny is in drag half the time? You know, and I don't know, one of the other cartoon characters falls in love with him. Are they gonna say you cannot air Some Like It Hot in Florida? Why?
You cannot perform pantomimes that are so all the rage in England. Big part of their tradition. No pantos here.
Yeah. So there are a lot of different things that are just absolutely absurd about this Florida law and other laws that they're passing. But the anti-drag stuff is so clearly a First Amendment case. And this has to go get sued. And it really, if the Supreme Court finds that you can stop people from, that you can fine people and criminalize watching drag shows, well, that's certainly going to be, that's certainly going to indicate a downturn in America, and will really, really indicate that there are six Supreme Court justices who have to be removed somehow. Ugh, boy, it's really so awful. What the hell is going on? It's just hard to comprehend how stupid this is. Between banning something, and again, it's all, you know, what's the headlines? Oh, it's a headline, let's do that. And without thinking it through, these are legislators and governors who are stupid. Just stupid. You can't, a state cannot effectively ban a website. And how the hell is anybody going to ban drag performances without violating the First Amendment? How the hell do you do that? You can't, in my opinion. Well, this is a battle, and we're going to see how it goes. And I'm sorry that people in Florida are having to suffer through this crap, but we must persevere, and we must fight these bigots. That's been it for Back in the Book this week. What's coming up next?
Ecologic with Ken Gale, Donna Stein, and Sally Gellert.
Remember, we are preempted next week. We're back on June 3rd. So we're going to have late summer on Monday. Go out, enjoy it, have fun, and above all, remember what that hoping the First Amendment prevails against the bigots Dormouse said.
Let's come together for the next WBAI Community Advisory Board meeting, the next CAB meeting. It's on Sunday, May 21st at 1 p.m. The CAB is an advisory board which reviews programming and other station policies. If you want to attend the CAB meeting, you can join by teleconference 619-309-1058. Again, that's 619-309-1058. The PIN number is 641711. Everyone's invited to call in and join the meeting. The WBAI family is happy that more and more people are now attending CAB meetings. Again, the call-in number is 619-309-1058. The PIN number, 641711. Come together and attend the next CAB meeting Sunday at 1 p.m.
Hello, I'm David Rothenberg. I joined up with WBAI not long after Marconi discovered the wireless. If you tune in on any Saturday, that's the name of my program, you'll hear some good music, commentary covering politics, theater, movies, books, and a word or two about the criminal justice system. Actually, it's whatever's on my mind. And there's usually a guest or two to liven things up. Good start for the weekend, so I've been told. Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m. Oh, and I often have tickets for Broadway and off-Broadway shows. You can get to see a play and support listener-sponsored BAI at the same time. I'm looking forward to your stopping by. I can hear you listening already.
Oh, baby, let's have a party.
Let's have a party.
Let's all begin.
Stand up. You've been sitting way too long.
This is Ralph Nader. You can now listen to the Ralph Nader Radio Hour on Saturday afternoon at 5 p.m. It'll be one of the least forgettable radio programs in your experience because we touch on subjects not covered by the mainstream media, the public media, and often the independent media. You can listen to this program on listener-sponsored WBAI at 99.5 FM, where it's broadcast and streamed at WBAI.org.
It ain't gonna happen until folks like you and me just stand up. Well, you've been sitting way too long.
Oh, step up.
You know what's right and you know what's wrong.